Right. Bad idea. Bad idea. You're going to spend a lot less money if you get the lawyer involved early, because they're going to, like I said, they're going to submit a good application for you, and you're not going to have to correct everything, which is double, triple the time. And if they had hired me, you know, I do a zoning analysis immediately, so I know what zone you're in, what the requirements are, and I go through that particular town's requirements, as well as the state law, which is important. And I'm going in and trying to direct what the application will be. It backfired, but the particular town, frankly, didn't like the client that I represent. And that went horribly wrong. So this client, in my opinion, is 100% entitled to this simple variance that he was requesting. And now we're going to have to appeal it to a superior court, costing him tens of thousands of dollars on appeal. I would also say, you know, I have one. When the sink development.
Today, we are going to have an interesting conversation. We touch on the subject that we haven't talked on this podcast before. We're going to talk about land use laws, regulations, and all kinds of issues and potential troubles that developers could face as they embark on the development journey. Our guest today is Kelly Morris Salvatore, who's a real estate attorney and who's going to share with us a lot of interesting insights. Kelly, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Eugene. So just to introduce myself, I'm a lawyer licensed to practice in Rhode Island and Massachusetts. I've been practicing for just about 30 years now, mostly in Rhode Island. I'm also a municipal attorney, meaning I represent cities and towns. In one town, I am the town solicitor. That's what we call attorneys in Rhode Island that represent towns. And I've also done a lot of work as special counsel. So I am on kind of all sides of the equation when it comes to land use.
Excellent. What made you interested in land use?
So I think probably like many attorneys, when they go to law school and are young and impressionable, I really just wanted to be a trial attorney. And I kind of really just fell into it. The firm that I originally joined in Rhode Island needed help with land use. And I just took a great interest in it. I like the informal nature of it, you know, to a certain extent. It's more informal than obviously being in court. You get to know a lot of people around Rhode Island. It's very small state. You make great relationships with town officials, city officials. And I just enjoy doing it. Right now, I'm doing a lot of housing development, which is really greatly needed in Rhode Island and really around the country. So it's fun, meet a lot of people and get good projects approved.
Excellent. Excellent. What, I guess, here's kind of the challenge that I have in formulating the questions. I've used land use attorneys before. We've been through several litigation experiences in the past, but then we've also done projects without needing to use an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share, in your opinion, Kelly, what would you say is the reason a developer should call you or somebody like you when they embark on a new project?
So I think there are some cases where you really shouldn't need an attorney on really simple matters. I just had one very recently where my client, I told him you shouldn't even need an attorney on this, but you're dealing with small towns and the people on these boards are, you know, residents and they want to protect their town. So it's important to have an attorney and other licensed professionals that understand what the laws are, understand what the town can and can't require, and make sure that message is, and it's not just the board, it's the people in the audience, right? You're going to have neighbors there that just don't understand the laws. So a large part of my job is really educating the public of what the development is, what my client is entitled to, where the board may have some discretion and what neighbors can request, sometimes just voluntarily and sometimes, you know, what is required. So I think that certainly for large projects and projects that are proposed under certain like more complex laws, you absolutely need an attorney, and it should be early. The other thing I face is clients coming to me after they've filed an application, and now you're stuck with the application that they filed. So as early as possible is important. And, you know, I always tell clients, I might be very, very much involved. It depends on the application. I may not be involved much at all, because if you've got a great engineer and surveyor, I'm just there to kind of usher it through the process. But in other cases, and there's one I'm handling right now, that I am involved on a daily basis, lots of hours put in, because we have a difficult project with a difficult board. So I don't know. I hope that answers your question, but I would always consider just contacting an attorney just to see what they can offer. And you know, the other thing is, most of us that practice in this area have decent relationships with municipal officials, which is helpful.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, most of us don't call a lawyer until there's a problem, right? So.
Right. Bad idea. You're going to spend a lot less money if you get the lawyer involved early, because they're going to, like I said, they're going to submit a good application for you, and you're not going to have to correct everything, which is double, triple the time, right?
Right. No, exactly. Could you give us an example of, you know, maybe some of the problems or some of the issues that you had to solve that could have been avoided had you were involved from the beginning or earlier?
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes it's as simple as, what type of application should we be filing? Sometimes a planner, you know, or some municipal official will tell a client that they need to ask for a special use permit or a variance or a waiver, or they need to file for a particular type of maybe more complicated application. And if they had hired me, you know, I do a zoning analysis immediately, so I know what zone you're in, what the requirements are, and I go through that particular town's requirements as well as the state law, which is important. And I'm going in and trying to direct what the application will be, rather than just going into a planning office and saying, what should I file, right? So again, important to get involved so that you're filing the correct type of application and you're not asking for relief that you don't need, right? So that happens.
And it's exact same conversation I have with my clients all the time when they say, well, why do we need to put together this whole application process? Why can't we just call the city and ask them what we can do and what we cannot do? I'm like, well, you could, but if you want to be taken seriously, first of all, research the code, research what's allowed, research what you think you want, and then come with a specific request. That way they can analyze, first of all, take you seriously because they see that you've done your homework. But also, when you ask a question that may require some interpretation,
right,
you are asking for a specific routed question, and then you help them make their decision. You tell them that based on this, this, and that is what you think could be allowed, versus just coming in with a blanket question. Because in my experience, most municipal officials, the easiest path is to reject. The easiest path is to kick the can, and it's so much easier to say no and not have to deal with it than to say yes and then figure out how to actually implement it.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I have, again, different relationships with different plans across the state and different personalities, frankly. I run into many municipal officials, planners that want to help because they want a good development, and they want, you know, especially if it's a good proposal, they want to make sure that you do get through that process efficiently. And then there are other planners that, like you said, the first reaction is to reject. So it's important, I think it's important to go in saying, this is what we'd like to do. And yes, there are absolutely interpretations that have to be made. And then you kind of almost negotiate and massage the types of relief or the types of requests that you're seeking.
Right. Exactly. What would be a good, a good story is what I was going to ask, but a good story that would show something that went horribly wrong in your career. And I understand that a lot of times there's privacy issues that you can't talk about everything, but you know, something that just completely backfired or something that did not work as planned, that would serve as a good lesson for yourself or the listeners?
So, yeah, I mean, I would say when you say backfired, I think I started with saying that some applications shouldn't even need an attorney. And I don't think it was maybe a backfire, but the particular town, frankly, didn't like the client that I represent. And that went horribly wrong. So this client, in my opinion, is 100% entitled to this simple variance that he was requesting. And now we're going to have to appeal it to Superior Court, costing him tens of thousands of dollars on appeal. I would also say, you know, I have one challenging project right now where I thought that we do have a complete application. But frankly, I'll give it to the staff and the board. They are muddying up the waters as much as they can. And this is one of those, I would say, a NIMBY type response. They just don't want the project and they're making it very hard. Anything that you can do up front to make the process for your client go smoothly is so important. And, you know, I'm not going to take responsibility for this going horribly wrong, because they just keep every meeting, there's a new problem, another new problem that we have to react to that I've never seen before. I've been doing this for 30 years. So, but make sure you know who you're dealing with and know the, say, reputation of how the board works, how they react to proposals. This is the first time that I've worked in this community, and it's, you know, it's different. It's different, I'll say that, than any other community. And I feel confident that we will succeed on this application. The backfiring or the going terribly is really just the time it's taking, which is unfortunate.
Right.
So make sure you know what you need to present early. And again, this is a particular case where they just keep adding things, and they're doing a good job adding those things. But I think we're responding effectively. It's just not timely. You know, it's taking too much time.
Yeah. A few years ago, we were working on a project in Bellevue, Washington, where it's a mixed-use building in downtown. And we thought that we were doing the right thing by approaching the neighbors. And it was a condominium development right next door. We thought we'd approach them early. But our plans were pretty well set on what we were going to submit to the city. But we got a hold of them. We got introduced to their president of their HOA. And we said, look, we're proposing this building. It's going to go into the city. It's going to become public pretty soon. We wanted you to know and, you know, have a conversation, address maybe any concerns or questions you may have before you find out about it from the official public notice. And we thought we were doing the right thing. Well, what we did not anticipate is that we will be met with such hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And we put together a nice presentation. We rented out a restaurant across the street. Our architect was there. We had a scale model. We had a bunch of plans. And about 20 or 30 neighbors showed up. They listened to the presentation and they just went on the offensive and started attacking. And the problem was our building in downtown, we're allowed to build property line to property line. And our building was maximizing our lot. So we were going to build a wall pretty close to their windows, which of course, some of the neighbors didn't like. And it just so happened that the president of the HOA owned a condo on that corner. So some of her windows would get blocked, even though, I mean, the space between the windows and the wall would have been about, I forget now, maybe 15, maybe 20 feet. I mean, pretty close.
Yeah, there's got to be a fire code regulation. Yep.
Of course. And then, but at the narrowest spot where they had like this little stair tower protruding, at the narrowest spot, they were about maybe 2 feet away from their wall would be 2 feet away from our wall. And so they used that as an excuse. And anyway, it turned into a massive issue. We ended up receiving the design review approval. They appealed it. It went into a hearing examiner's hearing, I guess. That took weeks to prepare. We ended up spending, I don't know, upwards of a couple hundred thousand dollars to fight this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Then they ended up dropping it. I think the president of the HOA ended up selling her condo and they dropped the case. But the last, after they lost the hearing examiner appeal, they tried to sue us for prescriptive easement by saying that they've been using our property for mm-hmm. many years and that now they have prescriptive easement. And so I didn't even know what that meant. I had to get educated by our attorney at the time. And I'm like, man, how do people deal with it? So I've been telling people that, look, try to establish relationships with people as early as possible. But I don't know, what's your advice?
I wouldn't have done anything differently. Especially for larger projects. I mean, smaller projects, I think notice for a public hearing is fine. But on any decent sized project, you want to hear and be able to respond to, whatever that means, neighbors' comments. And one of my favorite sayings, and this is just symbolic really, is you might just need to add a couple of arborvitaes, right? Like it might just be a buffering issue, something like that. But if there's something that they're thinking about that's reasonable, and you can address that, so you don't have to spend a couple hundred thousand on an appeal, you know, again, I'm advising my clients that that might be the better way to go. I always want to hear what the neighbors are saying early. Oftentimes we'll have a pre-application meeting with the planning board, which does not require notice. We will either do a separate neighbors meeting like you did, or we'll tell the planner we have no objection to you providing notice. Because as soon as you understand what those comments are, the better you can address them or respond to them and saying that's unreasonable. So I would never, ever tell a client not to participate in a neighbor discussion. I also love peer reviews. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but I generally love peer reviews because, the two things that people complain about the most are traffic and drainage. Mm-hmm. And if you have the town's third-party consultant peer reviewing your experts, you generally come out where, you know, they might have to make a couple changes, but again, it's saving time, it's saving money, and you end up having essentially two experts saying that your project works. So, right. You know, those two things I think are very helpful.
Yeah, that's a good advice. We haven't done that for traffic and drainage before. We definitely have done it for structural issues, sometimes for architectural solutions. But that's an interesting concept. You're right. If you have multiple consultants. We definitely had to get additional consultants' opinions when we went into the hearing examiner's
mm-hmm. yeah.
room. But I mean,
here in the Northeast, right? Here in the Northeast, it's traffic and drainage. And nobody wants to believe the experts who have professional licenses and their licenses are on the line. I hear the engineers telling the client, no, we have to do this because what you're saying is not going to work. So they're doing it. But then when you have the municipality's engineer agreeing mm-hmm. with it, it's incredibly helpful.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I mean, in reality, we know that NIMBYs are opposing mostly because it's the views, it's the noise, it's just they don't like the change. And then right. they try to come up with, bogus reasons for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, bogus in quotes. But yeah.
And they don't understand, frankly, you know, that I do a lot of residential right now. Hasn't always been the case, but right now that's what's hot. And I actually had on a recent project, a neighbor say, are you going to put a light at the entrance of this residential development? You absolutely do not need a traffic light at an entrance mm-hmm. to a development of that size, because they don't, you know, obviously, especially today, we have people who work remotely or hybrid. People always have left at different times of day, come home at different times of day. Not everybody works. People actually think that at 6 a.m., 200 cars are going to leave the site all at once. And, you know, you need an expert to tell them that's not the case.
Right. Right. So. Exactly. Well, yeah. And the studies and simulations and, whatever it takes. Yeah. How's your, Kelly, how's your job changing with the times? How's it different today than it was years ago? What I'm thinking is, you know, availability of information, access to AI that can quickly analyze codes. We use it a lot. I rarely call attorneys anymore because a lot of my questions could be answered by AI. And I'm not just talking about cheap ChatGPT. You know, I'm talking about some complex solutions, that proprietary solutions that we've created. But how is your work changing?
Yeah, so my firm has definitely invested in very good AI. Legal research, we have AI products. We also have a product that's more of the, I guess, and again, remember, I've been around for 30 years, so I might not be used the technical, but the large language, but you know, like you said, a proprietary. And those are helpful. I do caution anyone, including you, to make sure, you know, we call the product that's produced our associate, right? Because we definitely want to review everything that's been generated. Yeah, for sure. But it can save hours. It saves hours for the client. And we put in all of our communications to the clients that we do use it, but you know, as attorneys, we have to make sure that the information that's produced is correct, because it's not always right.
Right. But has it helped you? Has it streamlined some of the processes? That's what I'm really after.
I'm a little late to the game, but I would say over the last year and a half, I've been using it more and more often. And yeah, we can add documents to the program and have them analyze those documents. It saves so much time when we're responding to pages and pages of comments from, again, peer engineers, just the paralegal work. You know, there's so much saved by that. And we can make templates for our documents where I know what I need to know. When I talked about the zoning analysis, for every project, I want to know what the zoning is. I want to know if there's any overlay districts. I want to know what the uses are that are allowed. Because some clients come in and they're like, what can I do on this property? So yeah, absolutely. It has changed with technology. And like I said, my firm has welcomed it, and we definitely embrace that efficiency.
Excellent. Yeah, we've been obviously using it a lot recently in the last couple of years. We've built our custom analysis models. And ever since I started podcasting and talking on social media, I've been getting requests from all over the country. And it's interesting. I was recently asked how I handle municipalities and areas that I've never worked in before with all their, you know, local laws and regulations. Right. And I'm like, you know what? Our local codes have changed in the last couple of years so much that I can't say that I know the codes anymore, because they're literally, they're completely different. So I have to do local code research, even here in the greater Seattle area, every time we start a new project. So I'm like, it's really no different. And with the AI tools that we use, it has simplified our work so much. When we look at the new project, our pre-feasibility work, basically early code research, is now completely automated. Mm-hmm. We can do an early screen, find out what's buildable, what's, you know, what the main parameters are, how many units we could put on a property. And that takes minutes now. It's not instant. It's not like you type in a question in ChatGPT, but it takes about 20 minutes to generate a report. And it's typically enough to clear that first gate. Like, okay, that's, you know, here's what we can do. And then we could prompt further and ask further questions. But it's been amazing to see see how that workflow has transformed.
Absolutely.
And I've noticed
it's a good start. It's a good start. Like, that's what I mean, though. I mean, what you just said, Eugene, is that your regulations, even your local regulations that you're familiar with, are constantly changing. So if the correct regulations haven't been updated on the web, you know, you really need to understand that, because I can think of one town in Rhode Island right now, and they don't codify their ordinances. So you literally have to go to the original ordinance and then look at every ordinance and kind of do your own codification, which that's not going to take you 20 minutes.
No, definitely. It is helpful. I have experienced that in Idaho, in one of the small towns where they had a code and then they had a whole list of ordinances, and not all of them were incorporated into the code.
Exactly.
And so our initial search, we just read the code, but then we set up this AI search and we said cross-reference the code with the list of ordinances. And so it was crunching data for probably a couple hours to give us the response that we needed. But, you know, it's difficult. And I've definitely seen AI make mistakes too, where it looks good on the surface, then you start digging and you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Even in the litigation context, that comes up often. I'm sure you've read about it, where lawyers are relying on AI and they're not proofreading and checking the citations, and then they're getting caught, and they're actually not, they're citing what seems to be supporting law that doesn't exist. And that's a problem. So I'm not skeptical. I think it's a great tool. I'm just careful.
Right. But like you said, it's like any tool, you know, you use tools to help you. You don't replace your own expertise with a tool. And that's my biggest experience, you know, or biggest argument when people talk AI down and when they're saying AI is going to replace jobs. Yeah, maybe some of them, but I look at it just like I look at an excavator. You know, yes, I'd rather use an excavator than a shovel, but it doesn't mean that it can run by itself.
I have heard of
self-driving excavators now.
Yeah, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty, right, you might need a shovel at the end.
Yeah, no, that's true. Exactly. I mean, we talk about it all the time, working with AI today, it's like working with a bunch of assistants. They give you the results, and then you still need to look at it, and you still need to correct it and direct it. So,
one of my partners calls this particular platform we have his associate, because it produces the first draft. And I think that's a good way of looking at it.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it is. It's an assistant. It's not a replacement. Mm. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, what else should we talk about that we haven't talked about yet?
I mean, what I'm working on these days, like I said, is housing. You also asked me, I think when we go into the AI conversation, about what's changed. You know, obviously just the way the market has evolved. I am doing a lot more housing than I am commercial. I think I have one mixed use project right now, but mostly everything is housing. I don't know how it is all over the United States. I know there's a housing crisis everywhere, but particularly in New England, there is a big push for additional housing. It's still hard though, financially, for developers to add the housing. And sometimes I think that the numbers that are required to get the additional density are somewhat arbitrary. So that's difficult. And I wish state legislators and local municipalities would understand that, because essentially every LMI unit that you're adding is a financial loser. So you really need the density. You need maybe 2-to-1 density, right? A market rate to LMI unit to actually make up for the loss on an LMI unit. There's a lot of that.
What's an LMI unit?
Oh, I'm sorry. So affordable.
Got it.
It's low and moderate income housing.
Got it.
So in Rhode Island, we call it the Low and Moderate Income Housing Act. So depending on what you're proposing, it can be anywhere from about 40% annual median income to 80% annual median income for rentals. And then you can all go all the way up to 120 annual median income for for sale products.
Yep. Yeah, I call them subsidized housing. What I keep talking about is that I would love to build affordable, but I want affordable to be market affordable, not subsidized by government or nonprofits. Because what ends up happening is subsidized housing costs a lot of times more money to build than market rate. And I just feel like it's so unfair.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, we're trying to build affordable, but it costs more. And in the end, everybody ends up paying for it.
So I have a client. We specifically decided to build 9 homes instead of 10 or 11, because anything under 10 does not require an LMI, low and moderate income housing component, because he's going to build houses that are over $1 million each. And he can only sell the LMI units, which have to be about the same size. They can be a little bit smaller, for maybe $400,000. So you have to build the same thing. And it doesn't matter what the large, you know, the market rate homes are. They could be $2 million, but you have to sell those LMI units at about $400,000 if it's a 3-bedroom. So So that's troubling, right? Because what ends up happening is if you want that extra density and you're looking to build under either what we call a comprehensive permit application, which gives you more density, that's the subsidy, by the way, is the density, they're doing condos because you're selling, you know, you get more units and you're selling the condos at maybe seven, again, we're in Rhode Island, so 700, 800, where you can sell the LMI units and you're not losing as much as when you're building large homes for over a million, mm-hmm. right? So that's a choice. And towns don't like the condo developments. They want to see single family production, but
right.
Again, financial loser. So.
Yeah, and it's very difficult right now. The biggest challenge is that construction costs keep rising with inflation, but interest rates are high, so affordability is not as good as it used to be a couple of years ago when mortgages were low.
Right.
And so people aren't buying as much and people aren't willing to pay as much. And we're seeing a lot of properties right now, especially infill properties, losing 20% of their projected value or selling at 20% below their projected values. And so I know developers aren't making any money. In many cases, they're losing money just to offload the inventory, but that's the reality. And as we're running pro formas on new projects, we are trying to, you know, squeeze margins wherever we can, which means in many cases, not hiring a land use attorney, not hiring some of the consultants that we normally would have, because we're trying to, you know, keep our margins Same. And keep the costs as low as possible and essentially rolling the dice that nothing bad is going to happen. So.
Yeah. And I guess if you're going to do it that way, I definitely get with the planner. And I do say to clients, you want to have, even though they don't have a vote, you do want their support, because usually planning boards will listen to the staff. So if you know you have support from staff, you're in better shape. So if you're looking at trying to save costs, I would at least do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially on larger, not very large, like very large development, commercial grade, like apartments, condos, I would definitely say have a land use attorney on your team from day one. Mm. On a smaller infill project where it could be, you know, a toss-up, building those relationships is extremely important. People typically yeah. don't fight. People typically don't sue people that they have a good relationship with, people that they like.
Yeah.
And I you know, I tell my clients, I tell my partners, look, if you can negotiate your way out of it, then start negotiating, because if you have to go into litigation, you'll never win. I'm like, the only people who win litigations are attorneys, because they get paid regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I'd look for ways, you know, where you're on the cusp of whether it's an administrative review by staff versus going to a public meeting. Like in the case I just said to you, we're doing 9 units, you know, part of the, I mean, we will have to go to the planning board for a different reason, but part of our analysis is, do we have to go to a board? Because again, it's not just the lawyer's time, but it's, is somebody going to appeal a decision of a staff member where, you know, all they do is check boxes. You get the approval. So looking for those administrative approvals, if you can, is helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Kelly, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for joining us. Lots of good advice, and I wish you the best in your practice.
Yes, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. For your contact information, would you like to share any emails, phone numbers, websites? Where can people find you?
Sure. My email address is ksalvatore@darroweverett.com. We have a great website. It's got a lot of information on it. So darroweverett.com. Yeah, I'd love to talk to whoever wants to talk about land use. I could talk about it for hours.
Excellent. Excellent. Sounds good. Yeah. And we'll have that in the show notes as well. Thanks again, Kelly.
Okay. All right. Great. Take care. Bye-bye. Real estate development. Real estate. Real estate. Real estate.